Thanks so much for listening to the Ridge Community Church podcast. My name is John. I'm one of the pastors on staff at the Ridge, and our vision is to bring the hope of Jesus into every home. So as a piece of that, our goal each week is to bring you something that's hopeful and helpful. So subscribe to this podcast to make sure you don't miss any hopeful and helpful conversations. Hello, everyone, and thanks for listening to this episode of the Ridge Podcast. If you find today's episode hopeful and helpful, then please follow or subscribe and then rate and review so that more people can find the conversation. If you're watching on YouTube, be sure to give us a follow and turn on notifications so that you don't miss any of the hopeful and helpful conversations we bring you every week. Now, today, I get to share with all of you a conversation that I had with Victor Weiler, one of the pastors on staff at the Ridge. Victor has gotten the chance to officiate many weddings and has walked a lot of couples through premarital counseling. We talk about the value of premarital counseling, some takeaways that can help you even if you've been married for a while, and why communication is just so important to any relationship. This is my conversation with Victor. Hey, Victor. Thanks for coming on the Ridge Podcast.
Well, it's always great to be able to join you, and I'm excited about talking all about a different topic today. So.
Yeah. Curious, like, hey, how are things going in the Weiler household?
They are going well. When you have a middle school boy and all the fun that comes with that and just drama of late grade schoolers, it's, you know, normal parenting stuff.
Yeah.
But for the most part, my wife's doing well. She's finished up some classes to be able to become an appraiser, and that's been really exciting for her. But also, my son's joined track this season.
Ooh.
So we have his first track meet today, actually.
That's exciting. Are you coaching him, or he's going to a different school?
He's on the team that I am head coaching. Yes.
Wow.
He definitely does not go the direction of the things that I coach in the team, but which is okay. Give him his space.
Yeah.
But when there's 130 kids on the team, he has plenty of space to be given. So,
yeah. And here's a little plug for those listening on the podcast to maybe check out YouTube. Victor is rocking a nice mustache this morning. So you have to tell me, like, what were the kiddos' reaction to the mustache?
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I wake up this morning and doing some filming for something for our kids this summer. And I was like, well, I got to get a mustache out, so you'll have to stay tuned for that, what that will be. But come down, and my son looks at me. He's like, that's awesome. So in the midst of rocking out stashes today, and when I go to a meet and everybody looks at me either wearily, like, ooh, who is that? Or that's awesome. I'm going to go talk to that guy. The stash is back. So
yeah, I think you have more hair on your mustache than I could probably grow on my entire face. So
this is about 5 days of growth.
Same. Yeah. Okay. Well, hey, so today we're going to talk about kind of the theme along premarital counseling. And I know that you get a chance to officiate quite a few weddings, and you help couples go through premarital counseling. And I know that For the most part, I think most pastors I've talked to, myself included, kind of require the people that they officiate a wedding for to, whether it's with them or with somebody else, to go through premarital counseling. Why do you think that is? Why do you think that they require that?
Well, I think it has a lot to do just with, it's a really good idea just to talk through the things when you're going over a process that changes the whole direction of your life. You think about it. There's some really big moments in life. Marriage is one of them. You know, getting that first house, having that first child, graduating from high school and going on to a whole different, like, there's different freedoms and different things that happen. And when marriage happens, even if you've been living together or not before that, marriage changes things. Marriage changes things, and you change during the course of marriage. And so to be able to work through the process of approaching that is a really important thing to do.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, right? Where it's like, I feel like there are a lot of different, like you mentioned, the huge life changes that happen, and we're quick to go to like experts and gain wisdom, right? You have a kid, you're talking with like all the people you know about what it's like to have a kid, you're chatting with a doctor about, hey, what's this going to be like? What do I do? Like, now that I'm taking care of this small human, you're trying to buy a house or or something like that, and you're like trying to get the expertise of like your real estate agent. And then I think sometimes when it comes to marriage, there's this like, maybe you'll chat with people you know, but it's almost this like, well, of course I, you know, it's just this continuation of what's happening, you know, but it's so much bigger than that, right?
Oh yeah. It's the commitment part of it. You know, it's yeah. There is a true commitment, and you're making a true commitment when you're having a child, you're making a true commitment when you're buying a house. And so when you're marrying someone, it's not even just a contract between, but it's the building and like what we look in the Bible, it's the bringing together of a man and a woman together yeah. with God. And I think that's what's the really important part of it.
So if like a couple asks you and you're like, you're going to officiate their wedding and they're like, why do we have to go through this? Like, what is actually going to make a difference? What do you typically say to them? Or is it for the most part, people respond like, yeah, let's do it. What's the typical response?
Usually I would say 90% of the couples that I've worked with already are already on board to want to do. Like, that's a thing that they are really excited about. Then I would say the other 10%, I've just done premarital for them, even if I haven't officiated their wedding.
Gotcha.
I've done a couple of those. But what I really say is it's just an opportunity to walk through what it means to be married. And we're not just trying to focus on what the wedding will be. Does that make sense? And
yeah.
So I'd say, hey, this is an opportunity to learn about one another and the differences and how you work with those differences in one another. And so I'll say this story is the first couple I ever worked with. They had been together 14 years already. They had two kids together.
Yeah.
And now they wanted to get married. And I said,
interesting.
Said, why is it that you need me to walk you through this? And why get married now? Mm. And they looked and they just said, we want to do it God's way now. Mm. And I just thought that was really powerful. And most of the couples I've been able to go through premarital all want the faith component in the mix of the premarital too, of saying, hey, this is not just about me. It's not just about my husband or wife. And it's not just about God, but it's how do we put all three of those things together to be able to make sure that we're doing this the right way or going about it the right way. So I think it's really that it's the same type of thing of like when you decide to go in for counseling, it's this knowledge of, I don't know what the future holds for me in this, but I know that I probably need some advice or even just some thoughts to move myself forward in how I can do better at this.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think it's important to separate the concepts of like marriage counseling versus premarital counseling, you know, because mm-hmm. I think that if you're not familiar with what premarital is, and we can get into like some of what that looks like, but if you're not familiar with what that looks like, they kind of sound very similar, but they're very different approaches, right? Where versus marriage counseling is a lot more about, you know, how do we, I guess, fine tune, or maybe sometimes it's like, hey, there's a specific issue that we really need to work through and we're trying to work through it. You know, not everybody, some people do it just to like, hey, how can we sharpen what we already have, you know, but but premarital is not necessarily, hey, we feel like there's this thing that we really need to work on before we get married, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I would say with marriage counseling, I don't know what the percentage is, but I would say it's a higher percentage that they almost go into it too late. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the last ditch effort to be able to make something happen that's already been deteriorating for years. Yeah. Where the premarital aspect of it is kind of the opportunity or the net to catch it before it slips through. That, you know, yeah, we do an assessment, and I always tell the couples, hey, this assessment right now is just a snapshot of where you are right now. Mm. And the things that you may have struggles with or miscommunications with that you're going to want to pay attention to, you know, and how those are going to be brought up and how they're going to come about. Because again, I think couples should honestly take this assessment every 5 to 10 years. I mean, that's something that I've been talking, Lindsay and I are coming up on 15, I was like, I'm going to try to remember here, 15 years. Yeah, we'll be 15 years this year. And I told her, I was like, it's probably a good idea for us to take it again, just because a lot has happened. We've changed a lot. Mm-hmm. And if we want to be able to continue, we've probably buried things down. We've probably ignored certain things. And we probably need to just take that snapshot again of like, where are we at? How are we going to really, how are we going to really move forward together? And that's really what that assessment is. Was like, hey, what are the things that we can kind of catch? What are things that we can kind of discuss right now? Because we already know that there's always struggles. There's no perfect marriage, there's no perfect relationship, but it's how you work together. And I think that you can be able, I'm sure you can, and I'm sure everybody listening right now can go and they can pinpoint a couple that they look to and think, wow, they really have it together. Well, guess what? They don't have it all together, but it's in the way that they work towards those things to make sure that they put the pieces together and that's how they work together as a couple and as a, and as parents, all of those different things. But
what assessment? Yeah. What assessment do you recommend?
Yeah. So we use right now, that's just what the pastors at the Ridge use. Mm-hmm. We use what's called the Prepare and Enrich curriculum. So yeah, it's basically taking you through specific steps of how you communicate, to how you use money, to how you socialize, and many different things. And it just gives you that, again, like I said before, snapshot of where you're at and how you interact with one another and with others.
I think one of the cool things about any assessment, right, whether it's personality, mm-hmm. whether it's work style, whatever it is, one of the cool things about taking an assessment with somebody else, not necessarily in this like kind of weird guilty way, but more mm-hmm. so in this like, hey, what's this shared tool set of communication that we can use around these topics, right? So it's super helpful to have common language, right? So yeah, it's like, I feel like this, but you feel like that, you know, versus having like, hey, this is what our assessment came back and said, this is kind of where we're at. Let's talk about that. And you have a specific, almost a guide, an outline to do that, which can be super helpful to like pave the way for certain types of communication on maybe topics that are harder to talk about.
What are some of the topics that are harder to talk about? I think the number one, which is definitely at the top of my list in my marriage too, is communication. In the way, like, there's something to be said about, I don't want to say opposites attract, but in the way that when two people get married, there's two different forms of communicators right there.
Yeah.
And I would say, like, from my wife and I, we are on opposite ends of how we mm-hmm. communicate. I can say something that I think is as clear as day that makes so much sense, and she will ask a completely offshoot different question, really, like thinking that we're communicating. And I'm like, whoa, that's not what I asked, or that's what I said. And so I would say the number one thing is, a lot of times in the first 2 years of marriage, if there's certain things that there's communication breakdowns, that's when you start to ignore things, you start to shut down, and you start to find defensive ways to not have those conversations come about. And so what happens is now you just distance yourself a little bit. Now, you might still be happy, you might still be good, but you're not in this full communication key. Mm-hmm. And I can honestly say the hardest 2 years of my marriage so far have been the first 2 years, because we were learning how to try to communicate and realizing we were striking out big time on communication. And it's still a struggle to this day, but we keep trying to find a way to come about it. And so for when I'm working with couples, I say, keep fighting to find a way, because marriage is worth it. It's worth it in the sense of who you are and what, how God can use it. But also, there's just that component of like, it's easy to give in. It's easy to give up. In today's society, if you're not happy, go seek with what you're happy to go do. That's culture. What, you know, like if you're not happy, go find your happiness. So if I'm not happy in my marriage anymore, why should I fight for it? Mm. And we need to fight for it, you know? And I'm sure Pastor Mark, or Pastor Tyler, or Forrest, or Jody can speak a much better sermon on it, but really here is the key of it. We gotta be willing to fight for something. And I would say that that's the one thing. And so, fight for communication. I think that is the one thing that I see most of, even when it shows up We connect on 90% communication.
Yeah.
When we get to the one exercise where we're talking about conflict resolution, it's amazing to be sitting in those premarital discussions. I'm like, this is the one where it might get a little awkward.
Yeah.
Because I'm sitting there as a mediator, just listening, and I'm having them talk to one another about an issue.
Yeah.
And it can get really awkward, you know, and it's just like, cause they're trying to find the words to say, without you using that, the U word, you know, like that's what we really talk about is like, don't say, well, I hate it when you always do this, or, you know, like, because you have to say, hey, it makes me feel this way.
Yeah.
When this happens. Mm. And then I have them repeat it back, you know, like, hey, what are you hearing them say? What are you hearing them say right now? And that's what we have. That's how we have to be able to clear up, as opposed to, hey, what zinger can I get into my husband or my wife to make them feel like, oh, I really messed up here, as opposed to how are we working together to make that happen?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I think that there's a lot of parallels with almost like training for something, right? So like as a coach, you know, it's so easy once you start training. If you start training, like we'll call it a bad habit, you know, then that the more you do that, the more that develops. I don't think that's going to be shocking news to anybody. Like it's not exactly a profound thought, but I think that happens within our communication styles too, right? The longer that we communicate a certain way, even if it's specifically to certain people, those communication styles like stick with us longer or harder to break.
Yep.
And that's the cool thing I think about when you go through premarital or even if you're married and you know, you have that habit, it's like, okay, well, how can I start shifting that communication style habit to be more effective as soon as I can? And that, I think that's one of the huge benefits of gaining that kind of tool set before you even get married is then you're building and working on those habits throughout the whole time. And like I said, the shared like language, you have the chance to like go back and think about, oh, what was that tool set? Maybe we didn't deal with that issue for, you mentioned a year or two into our marriage, but then it pops up and it's like, okay, and you never want to weaponize like something like that. Like, you know, like, well, premarital counselor Victor said, you know, like that's not exactly going to be a helpful thing. But I do think that you can go back to some of those things and say, okay, well, now we're dealing with this thing that we talked about a while ago. Maybe we could use a refresher on. Is there anything you're not trying to do with premarital counseling? Maybe that's a weird way of asking that question.
What are you trying not to do?
Like, what is it not? What is premarital not?
Premarital is not just focusing on the wedding day.
Yeah.
I think that can be very much the focus of, we do 5 sessions together and only the last session is focused on the wedding. Those first 4 are about building a marriage. And so I am not just focused on the wedding day because it's one day and it's a day that you should remember forever and it should be awesome and you can tell your kids about it. But I want my kids to look at, you know, did I treat my wife well? You know, did I continue to try to communicate with her? And I'm probably not very successful in most of those things either too, because it's amazing what your kids pick up on. I would just say, it is not the wedding. It's about that journey with who you are as 2 people and inviting God into it as well.
Yeah. You kind of mentioned like periodically redoing the assessment. Is there anything else that you think like content wise that you'd recommend, like, hey, maybe periodically go back over this, because we can all use refreshers on things like that. And obviously the farther away you get from those conversations you have, the less they likely they are to stick in your mind.
Yeah. Where do you start? I talked about the communication aspect of it. I think there's always, like with one couple I was working with in talking about like, hey, it's probably not a bad idea to have a weekly meeting together where you sit down on Sunday night and talk the week out. It will get harder when you have kids and you're trying to put them to bed and you're exhausted and you have to get to work. Yes. But get in the rhythm of doing it now before those more complicated things come, because then you're making the time for it. And then it doesn't become all of a sudden Wednesday comes up and you're like, I thought you were doing blah, 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 and there's like a miscommunication. There's even those types of things that I think looking at those things, budgeting. Many couples do the joint of putting all of the resources together and having it. Some have separate accounts for, you know, if they have the extra side jobs, things like that to buy what they want to do, you know, so whatever you do. But I think budgeting, that's one thing that I would say once or twice a year, my wife and I get back together and we sit down and I say, hey, here's what we're spending. Here's what we're doing. This is how much we really have. And does it equal zero at the end and not negative?
Yeah.
So those are the things that I think that helps keep it on the same page. And then I think most importantly, yeah, you've been married 10, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 years. How are you continuing to date each other? How are you continuing to date one another? One thing, and this comes from a non-Christian family, but I've always loved it so much, is this comes from my older brother. And I said, I really admire your marriage and the way that you guys have raised your kids. What is one thing that you would just give as the advice of what you're doing? He's like, we continue to date one another. And the way that we do that is we don't sit there and talk about the kids the whole time and what they're doing, because guess what? The kids are going to move away and then we have nothing to talk about. You know, like we have to be able to know each other. So what they do is they say, hey, we give the first 10 to 15 minutes to talk about how the kids are doing. And cause my older brother's an empty nester now. The kids just moved out last year, the last one 2 years ago. And so on their dates now, they would do 10 to 15 minutes talking about the kids. And then the rest was just about each other. The rest was about each other or what was going on at work and them communicating and connecting with each other on that. And I think that's a really important thing, is you have to continue to know and love your spouse for who they continue to become. Yeah. Because your spouse isn't the same person that you married when you got married to them. They've changed, and you can love them in many different ways. Or, you know, you're going to continue to grow to love them in the different ways of who they become.
Yeah. Okay. So, that's kind of like, okay, maybe you're forming these habits inside of marriage. How about like to the couple right now that's dating, maybe they're engaged, and is there a single, in your opinion, hey, this, when you go into premarital counseling, you really want to practice maybe this skill more than any other, or you want to walk away with this ability, if nothing else. Like, is there any like single, like maybe most helpful part of premarital counseling?
I would say learning to communicate. That's the story I'm going to stick to, is things will be misunderstood. How do you find a way to fight well?
So
Craig Groeschel has a marriage study out there that actually, that our pastors have watched and they use in premarital. And so I use this and I actually have the couples watch this one. Mm-hmm. And so the learning to fight well is you are going to have things that you don't agree with. And so, when you have those miscommunications or when you have those butting of heads on things, how do you fight well in the sense that, how are you listening to what the other person's saying without thinking about what you're going to say next? So what it comes down to is, are you actually truly listening to what your spouse or what your fiance or what your girlfriend or boyfriend has to say?
Yeah.
Because if you're actually listening to what they have to say, instead of thinking about what you need to say next, which we all do it. It becomes much more clear that, like, I don't know, really funny thing, very offshoot here is, my wife was watching a Scooby-Doo episode yesterday and it was all about men listening to women. Like the episode was about that. And
interesting.
Yeah. It was a really interesting episode, and they all determined to like, oh, you just need to listen. You just need to listen to your girl and that will be good. And Daphne says to Fred, oh, that's so great. I love you so much. And he's like, yes, I'd love to go get a hot dog.
Oh no.
And so it's that point of like, we're sitting here internalizing what we're thinking. And like, I know this, like it fits right in, but it's that point of like, we have our own selfish needs and desires and the things that we want to say, but are we willing to listen to what the other person has to say first? So what I'm trying to be able to teach my kids right now, which is a really hard thing right now, is how are we thinking about someone else first, as opposed to what our first dire need is of, I need candy or I need to play video games. So instead of like, hey, maybe we should wait in the back of the line and everybody be served first. And guess what? We will still get food in the end. It might not be the exact cookie you wanted or whatever, but you will get served. And sometimes we have to push to the front of the line to do it. Just same things with relationships, is we're fighting for our own selfish needs. And one thing I say about in marriage counseling as well too, premarital, is every step of the way that you go along in your married life is another step of you dying to your selfishnesses. When you die to your selfishnesses, you become more of a servant of the person that you're with. And that takes time. And you're going to have to be able to be patient with one another. You're going to have to learn to forgive one another. And so that's where I think I say communication, but it's kind of the iceberg thing. Here's this little word communication, and underneath, there's so many more layers to it. There's so many more things that come up with that.
Yeah, I think what's really fascinating is that it can almost be challenging to know what you're not good at communicating until you experience a situation where you have to communicate that, right? And, I've experienced that, and it's like, okay, maybe I thought I was saying this, but really what I was really saying is that, and it doesn't really matter what I was trying to say. It doesn't really matter, I guess it matters some, but it doesn't really matter. It's not very helpful if I intended it to mean this, but I actually communicated this. And so learning, hey, how do you communicate most effectively so that your partner can hear and understand what you're saying? Like, there's an inherent selflessness to that, because it's saying, it's not about what's natural to you, right? It's about what the other person can naturally hear. And that is that, even that act is like, but I said that, but it's natural. It's easier for me to say it this way. It's like, that may be true, but if your ultimate goal is to have this better relationship, this better marriage, then you have to, like, even in your communication, be selfless. And I mean, that goes into too, you talk about the willingness to listen first, right? That in and of itself is a selfless thing too, right? Where it's like, we have this desire to be heard or be right. and instead it's like, but what I want more than to be heard, is for us to communicate well, for us to have a great marriage. And that means I need to listen better.
That's really good. I think two other, just things for, I don't know if you were going to ask this, but just kind of, advice things as you're working on relationships, continue to pay attention to their love language, in the way that they are loved. And I know there's the five love languages type thing, but, sometimes the way that we try to love our spouse, isn't always the way that they feel loved. So I think it's really important if, for example, you love buying and receiving gifts, and then that's what you do for your spouse, but their love language is like, I just want some quality time with you. I could care less about, I don't care about the gifts. I just want to spend some good quality time with you. And quality time is not probably sitting down on the couch watching Netflix and both of us are on our phones, not that type of quality time.
Do you ever have interactions where you're chatting with a couple and they don't, like, they're really surprised by what the other person's love language is?
You know what? I would say 80% of the time, they're not surprised. They know what it is. It's just hard to think outside of their own loving. Like, you have to work against the grain on it. You have to push yourself out of your boundaries to be like, I know I'm loved this. I feel loved this way. I need to stretch out and love them this way. And that's, again, similar to what you said today. And then the other thing to pay attention to is, how are they filling their cup? I always do an exercise with couples that I learned from a pastor a couple of years back, of having them just draw a circle, put their name in the middle, draw out some lines from it, and circle five or six things of what are things that fill their cup.
And when you say fill their cup, what do you mean?
Fill their cup. Just me. I love running. If I'm not running, I become an angry beast. You know,
so like it's energizes not, you, know, you, makes you feel like,
yep,
makes
it, you feel that's good. Okay. So if I get out 4 to 5 times a week, I'm filling my cup of running. If I'm only running once a week, I'm not filling my cup of running. So those are the things that fill my life. It's good for it to be written and out and present so that you can see it. But do this exercise. It's very simple. It takes like 5 minutes to do.
Yeah.
You have your name. You pick 5 or 6 things that fill your cup. And then you give it a rating of red, that it's not happening. Yellow, that it's, it happens. Like I get a run. I get two runs a week, but it's not fulfilling my cup. Or green, I'm getting out for a run 4 to 5 times a week and I'm feeling good in that area. When I did this with this exercise, you know, I found out a lot of things about what were going on with in Lindsay's life that I was like, oh, I need to really help you fill your own cup so that you can be not just a better version of you, but a better wife, a better mom, that you can just feel better about yourself. And that's just the thing to kind of pay attention to. So that's the other thing that I think is really helpful as well.
I think that's so wise, you know, because I think that there, it's almost a little bit of like unspoken expectations, and it may be expectations that you didn't even know you had, right? Where it's like, oh, I didn't realize that exercising was that important to me until I couldn't do it. And all of a sudden, like, just the structure of our schedule or the structure of our life has made that really challenging. And so when you have those conversations, it's like, okay, now I know that if like I help you prioritize this, and maybe it's like you have kids, okay, I take that half an hour to watch the kids while you do that thing, you know. I feel like that's so helpful because you might not even know that that was so important.
Yep, you don't know unless you ask.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I think that, and this goes even back to like the value of premarital counseling. Sometimes one person can know, but the other person doesn't. And so when you have a dedicated time to work through things together in the busyness of life, where it's like, especially if you're planning a wedding, you've got like a million things going on and you're so stressed, and maybe you're not even entirely sure why you're so stressed, and nobody else quite gets it and remembers that wedding planning is so stressful. But having that specific carved out time that's dedicated to working and gaining that skill of communication and expectations and all those things. So, Victor, thank you so much. Thanks for sharing this. I don't know if there was any final comments you had or if that's good.
I'm good on that.
Cool. Yeah. I think lots of really great stuff in this conversation, whether it's even from just like understanding that, hey, if you're thinking about premarital counseling, do it. Yeah. It's super valuable. It's such a helpful tool even years later. And if you're married, there's still ways that you can kind of just grow in your ability to communicate. And I call it the skill of being married. Yeah, you can grow in your skill of being married. So thanks, Victor.
It very much is. You're very welcome. Thanks for having me on.
Well, that was my conversation with Victor. Two big takeaways. One, if you're not married, premarital counseling can be so helpful for setting a good foundation for your marriage. Two, I love the idea of periodically going over some of the marriage assessments to continue to help your marriage grow as you grow. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Ridge Podcast, and make sure to follow and subscribe so that you don't miss any hopeful and helpful conversations.